Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is Thursday, October 18th, 2018. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this week. We have two great special reports we just published in the last week and a half. One, the newest one, public, and so you can send to your friends and colleagues far and wide, is an interview with Aaron and Melissa Dykes of True Stream Media about their new documentary, The Minds of Men. It's fantastic. So great background on the Minds of Men and what they're up to next. If you haven't seen Minds of Men, you absolutely want to put that on your list. And then also a special Slayer report, also public, you can send to your friends with Alan Phillips, Your Health Freedoms. Both of those are efforts, as we always do, to provide air cover and support for some of the outstanding freedom fighters in our network. And we're going to regularly be swooping in and trying to support anybody. It's very, very important that independent media and the people who are really fighting for your freedoms, and I really care about health freedoms, as you know, are supported. We can't let the environment pick us off one by one. We've got to hang together. I'm leaving tomorrow from Lake Constance, where I am now in Bavaria in Germany, headed to Italy for the Scientists for Peace International Conference. It's linked from the events if you want to learn more. I think one subscriber is coming. I'll be there with Ola Groniger, who does our Future Science series. After Italy, I'll head up to Switzerland. I have appointments in Lugano and then Zurich, and then I'll be in Basel, Thomas Meyer, from the 23rd to the 4th. Then I'll be in New York City for 5 days, and then back to Hickory Valley, Tennessee. Our theme tonight is Learning to Walk About, which is the title of our interview. Harry Blaser and I, for several months now, have been working on long outlines about the first outline was called the AI invasion and went through all the different ways that AI would could invade and change our lives. And then we realized, well, what we really need to talk about is the fact that you've got an emergent oligarchy who's using this stuff to really control and privatize. So we went from the AI invasion to oligarchy and privatization. And then finally, after Harry came to Hickory Valley and we spent just a day talking about this, we realized what everybody really needs to know is how. How are we going to manage an environment when you have so many changes going up the S-curve all at the same time? It's something I think we all need to think deeply about and talk about. How are we going to do this? It's a very big change in perspective. You need to become much more light on your feet, much more flexible. It's funny, I'm always talking to people who are thinking of leaving where they are and going someplace else, and I keep telling them, you have in your mind a paradigm that you're going to find a new place and then you're going to go there and be safe, and it's not like that. You need to be prepared to move. Movement is life. So I want to encourage you, after you listen to Learning to Walk About, to take some time to do some deep strategic planning. The end of the year is always a great time to do it. Make a plan now to take some serious time during the holidays or in early January to really do some deep planning, you know, both for you personally, your family, but as well as whatever your career or business is. Money and markets, I'm working off the Wednesday close because I'm in Europe. The dollar strong. The Fed keeps bumping interest rates, and that means a strong dollar. So it's up 3.18% so far this year. Treasury is back down, or backed off a little bit. So now it's down almost 8% for the year. The intermediate's down 3.36%. And the bond aggregate down 2.22%. Junk still positive at 0.94, almost 1%. Equities is a sea of red, a red ink, except for the United States. So U.S. is still the strong spot, and it's still in a bull despite the recent correction. No indication yet that we're dealing with anything more than a correction. We'll talk a lot more about that next week when we do the equity overview. The S&P now up 6.45% for the year. The home builders soft spot, they're down almost 19% for the year. VGK, the European ETF, is now down 6.62%. Germany's down 11.26%. That's a little bit better than last week. The developed markets minus North America down 6%. China, large caps down 11.67% and small caps down 18.7%. Remember, before the trade war started, the Chinese stock market was flying. The currency, Chinese currency charges are not going to stick. In fact, Treasury has announced, that it is not making a case. The yuan is down 10% against the dollar since spring, and that's part of the problem with trade sanctions. You can slap on the trade sanctions, but the currency market can claw it back. S&P just came out. It's unbelievable. S&P, one of the big U.S. rating agencies, has been completely silent on the $21 trillion missing from the U.S. government. But just as the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board announced a policy that says the U.S. government can do whatever it wants with its books, it can cook its books entirely, and it's not a problem. Not that they have the legal authority to do it, but that's what they're saying. We don't see S&P say anything bo peep about that. It just coincidentally happens to come out with an announcement that the Chinese debt numbers are $5 trillion greater. In fact, if you look at the where the debt's coming from, it's the local government debt. And in fact, local government has been financing a lot of the development of tech and AI. And so if you're the United States and you want to shut that down, this is not a bad way to go about it. Then the emerging markets down 12.71%. We've got the G20 meeting coming up in November, and it's going to be worth watching the BRICS lineup, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and see how those communications are working. I posted a new article from Escobar today about how wild the G20 meeting could get. There's no doubt that this environment tends to pull people apart. We're seeing that all over the world. Commodities, the commodity index now up 3.02% for the year, gold down 6.35%, and silver down 13.82%. Oil still flying now up 30.58%. That means rising oil prices creates money worth fighting over. Well, the U.S. is the geopolitical hotspot globally. There's no doubt about that. And right in the middle of it is the disappearance or assassination of Washington Post reporter Jamal Khashoggi. And what a pile of non-information, disinformation, or misleading information is going on around this. Let me back up and let's look at the big picture on what this is about. This is about, in my opinion, three things. One is petrodollars. Two is 9/11. And three is what the U.S. is going to do shortly on Iran. Are we going to, in terms of sanctions and whether or not we basically throw Iran off the SWIFT system? And then if you look at that lineup, petrodollars, 9/11, and Iran, this is really about the Midianite thing. The Midianite thing is going on hot and heavy, and there's no better example than this. Okay, so let's go back and remember what OPEC was. In my opinion, OPEC was not a creature of the Middle East. It was a creature of the Western intelligence agencies. You had a cartel come together in OPEC, raise oil prices, generating huge amounts of money that just coincidentally had to be essentially managed by financial institutions based in London and the United States. So people like the Saudi royal family technically owned the money, but in fact, it was London and New York that was directing how the money got used, where it went, who got the loans, what companies got the stock investment. So as long as the New York, the top Fed member banks in New York were making the calls on where the capital was allocated, the Saudi royal family could pretend it was their money. But the reality is, if you look at who controlled, it wasn't the Saudi royal family, within reason. So you get these situations where, you know, everybody, the Saudis think it's their money, the intelligence agencies think it's their money, the New York banks think it's their money, and everybody's fighting over the money. Now that the Bretton Woods system is basically diminishing, what we're seeing is, I think, among other things, a fight over where the remaining Saudi petrodollars are going to go. And of course, with oil prices up, that petrodollar account is probably rising. The other thing is we've seen a lot of information leaking out on 9/11. The Michael Moore of True Pundit has a new book on whistleblower evidence on FBI involvement with 9/11 and cover-ups, including Mueller. And it wouldn't surprise me if part of whatever Khashoggi was up to relates to the lawsuit against Saudi Arabia and more leakage about Saudi Arabia's role in 9/11. For me, the dead giveaway as to what this might be about was J.P. Morgan's chairman, Jamie Dimon, canceled his trip to the big investment conference shortly in Saudi Arabia, which says to me, you know, he doesn't want to get hacked apart by a bone saw. If he refuses, you know, if he doesn't agree to do whatever the Saudis want him to do with their, what is supposed to be their bank accounts. So Dimon canceling says to me, something's really up. Finally, you were watching a partnership between Israel and the Saudis and the United States coming together to figure out what and how they were going to deal with Iran, which is a very important piece of the U.S. competition with China, so to speak. And so you had an effective lineup of people who had a coherent policy on Iran. And we knew the sanction decision was coming up, whether or not Iran was going to be thrown off the SWIFT system or whether the United States was going to involve the SWIFT system as part of enforcement of its sanctions. If it didn't, the sanctions weren't going to have a lot of bite. And just coincidentally, right before the U.S. gets ready to move on whatever it's going to do with Iran, something happens which puts tremendous space between the United States on one side and Saudi Arabia. We see the president trying to give the prince in Saudi Arabia the benefit of the doubt. It's getting harder and harder to do. If you look at what's been pouring out through the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and a number of other periodicals, one implication has been that the Saudis will give up the hit teams that did the job, which raises the question, if how are you going to kill with impunity if the hit teams get thrown under the political bus? All of these things are happening at the same time that the missing money issue in the United States, the leadership may believe that the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board sort of closes the book on that, but I don't think so. There are too many people who've connected the dots between their pension fund not having money and the $21 trillion missing. So clearly, if you look at what has happened on the Khashoggi disappearance, something very, very important is up. But the Midianite thing is happening, which means the factions are squabbling. And I think a lot more has to come out on this story. But again, deep down, at the heart of it, I think, it's liability on 9/11, liability on Iran. Those two are related if you listen to the Michael Moore of a True Pundit, and a squabble over who gets the petrodollars. So it's about money and covering up your risk. And I suspect Saudi Arabia, when it comes to 9/11, has major, major risk. One thing I wanted to mention is we saw last week the global F-35 fleet, the Lockheed Martin fighter for the U.S. military. There was a crash, and so the F-35s were grounded. Well, sure enough, when the Hurricane Michael hit the Florida Panhandle and destroyed an Air Force base, you had a whole bunch of 22s and I think a few F-35s. But if you look at the sort of what it's done to the American air fleets from either the the crash and the beaching of the F-35s or the destruction of the 22s down at the Tisdale Air Force Base, somebody is causing the Army an enormous whack. Anyway, what I would say is the Midianite thing is about to get much worse. So, and I think it's going to be with us for a long time. So keep an eye on this because it could go in some very interesting places. Joseph Farrell is going to have a post on it tomorrow. And I'm curious, given his analysis of the Saudi role in 9/11, what he's going to see in this. Nikki Haley, ambassador to the UN, is resigned. As she resigns, sure enough, the UN negotiates with Ecuador and the powers that be to get Julian Assange back online. I think that's very interesting because if you look at what additional dirt WikiLeaks could dish out on Clinton and a number of different people and factions who may be on the potential list to be purged, it's they could dish a lot out. And I suspect if Assange is being allowed to get back online, even with conditions, somebody wants all of that dished out. So where and how will the unraveling continue? Or I call it the unraveling, let the purge begin. When will they do it? The U.S. is in the middle of midterm elections. We have midterm elections in the first week of the November. The GOP is leading now in the Senate, as well as in the state house races. But the House is up for grabs. It's, in my opinion, it's too close to call, but it could go either way. We see Greg Palast reporting aggressively around the country of massive voter fraud, pretty significant. So clearly the Republicans are doing their bit to make sure they win. You have quite a competition in Texas between a young Irishman from the El Paso, whose name is Beto, who's raised $38 million compared to Ted Cruz's $12 million. And so we really see Democrats out fundraising the Republicans, including in the House. And you've got not only widespread support from the Democratic base, but you've got enormous money coming in from a couple of hedge fund operators who've made it their business to make sure the Democrats get standing in both the House and the Senate. Don't underestimate the importance of the Shrieka meter getting bested in the Kavanaugh situation. And it's not just Kavanaugh. Now the judge has thrown out the Stormy Daniels lawsuit. And the Shrieka meter is getting beat on some really big stuff. So Kavanaugh was clearly one. Stormy Daniels is another. The Russian interference, when Bob Woodward said in 2 years of looking, he's never found any evidence of Russian interference in the campaign. That's pretty compelling. So I have not seen a president beat the Shrieka meter since Eisenhower beat the Sputnik fever sort of Shrieka meter back. And if you look at what Trump has accomplished in terms of beating back the Shrieka meter, it's really, it's very, very significant. Don't underestimate what this means in terms of political force over the next 2 to 6 years. It was very interesting, as one guy said in his analysis of what happened. He said, you got to give the guy credit. He is a change agent. Meantime, Mueller apparently has flipped Manafort and Cohen. And now we have the New York AG proceeding with going through all the Trump family tax returns. I don't think any of this is going to succeed in getting Trump or getting him impeached, but it's going to create a lot of trench warfare and pain, including pains for his kids. With Kavanaugh over, the Shrieka meter was back at work, this time with some stuff that's more sophisticated than the high school sex allegations. The first thing is there's a double down on climate change BS, and I mean a real BS. It's incredible. We have Paul Hawken doing a new book, a new push to network the globe and come up with real solutions. And it's interesting, when you look at his real solutions, it all involves taking 5G and making AI, you know, giving AI access to every aspect of your life, your home, your physical body, it's building out the 5G and AI networks and the digital, it's digital technology, whether it's phone or computer. It's building out the digital infrastructure you need to really roll out the 5G and AI. And if you look at what Paul Hawken is up to, you know, it's so diabolical and you can't believe they don't know. But I never underestimate the extent to which people, you know, really don't know what they're up to. But when I see a long list of solutions for climate change that are essentially remarketing and repackaging the whole smart grid, I just want to roll my eyes. Al Gore is out there too. And now we have a story today saying our beer supply is threatened. So the implication being, well, then it must be really, really serious if it threatens the beer supply. We also have a double down on the financial coup d'etat. We have a new book from Alan Greenspan. And when you read, I've not read the book, nor will I, but when you read the reviews, you think, this guy knows no end of hubris. It's unbelievable. Anyway, if Trump manages or the Republicans manage to hold the Senate, you're going to have increased gridlock. At the same time, there's going to be no impeachment of Trump. If the Democrats both get most houses, anything's possible. This is very political. But if Trump holds the Senate or the Republicans hold the Senate, let alone if they win the House as well, that would be quite an upset. But it means that purges can begin. I think they've been going on quietly, but it should accelerate after the election as long as the Republicans hold the Senate at a minimum. What I would say is the Colosseum grows hungry. The Colosseum has been whipped into a frenzy for the last year, believing that they're going to see somebody, you know, walk the rails and end up in a jumpsuit. And the Colosseum is hungry. And so the question is, somebody needs to be fed to the lions. My guess is that Trump and the Department of Justice will work outside in. So they'll start with the low-level guys and keep moving in, building a case for the higher-level guys. Okay, a few more things to mention in the U.S. The JEDI contract award is supposed to be, the submissions are in this week. DOD is awarding a $10 billion cloud contract. The real competition is Amazon, IBM, and Oracle. That is a really big deal because if Amazon has the 17 intelligence agencies on it and then has DOD as well, you're talking about being able to re-engineer the entire U.S. government, ba-boom, through Amazon. Sears has finally filed for bankruptcy. So my understanding is a lot of the real estate value has been squeezed out of Sears, but it's still a major network and was a great name. And it's a real case study in a company that had quite a market share and presence and simply ignored mobile strategies and the new technology. Why they did it, I don't know, but it's going to be quite a case study for some business school class. We have Senator Warren promoting the idea, the notion of going and getting your DNA tested. And there's kind of a back and forth over Warren's claim that she's part Indian. Put that aside because it's completely irrelevant entertainment. Don't let this make DNA testing seem like something you ought to be doing. You don't. The last thing you want is your DNA in their database. Don't do it. So stay away. Trump names a new White House counsel. It's a D.C. litigator. It's an interesting choice, sort of like Kavanaugh, very much D.C. Catholic establishment. But what it says to me is Trump's planning on more fighting after the election. And so he's looking for a litigator who knows how to fight and has Department of Justice experience. So look for whatever he does. He literally, whether he starts in October or after the election, he's literally got to feed somebody to the lions in the Colosseum. But if he's smart, he'll go for the little folks first and work his way inside, having everybody just turn state's evidence on everybody else. It's probably too much to hope for that what we'll get is transparency on 9/11, but that would be glorious if the military really managed to get that accomplished. So let's turn to Europe. We have real blues in the EU. The chances of a hard Brexit continue. The UK needs to leave the European Union in March 2019, May has put forward her proposal called Chequers. The EU has rejected without giving a counterproposal or detailed feedback that would lead to a counterproposal. And May has said, look, you just, you know, that's not responsible. You've got to come up with a detailed counterproposal. I think she's right. Meantime, Italy has come forward with a budget that's not playing ball on austerity. And the question is, will the EU reject it? The thinking is they will probably reject it. And that could lead to some very interesting places. If there's anybody who could sort of pull the string and unravel the EU and force the northern countries into a sort of revised EU without the south, it's going to be Italy. I arrived in, I'm in Bavaria now in southern Germany, and I arrived right as Merkel's allies were smartly defeated in Bavaria. It happened on, was announced on Monday. Sure enough, the German stock market opening was delayed with a technical glitch, if you can imagine that. There's no doubt that there's incredible, I think the Germans are tired of the enormous controversies and tensions around the EU, and makes it very difficult to manage the country. But clearly Merkel's immigration policies have caused tremendous pain, and you now see more and more countries in the European Union just saying no. We have several countries now saying no to immigration quotas for 2018. We also, I should mention, have Hungary and Poland announcing big, big increased purchases in gold. Everybody's getting ready to protect their central bank with gold. Fidelity has launched a cryptocurrency trading operation. It's going to offer custodian solutions for hedge funds and institutional investors. This is very big. There's no doubt Fidelity is the lead brokerage firm in the country. And the problem with they've been mining Bitcoin for quite a while, trying to get their minds around how this works and what to do about it. There's no doubt that the big challenge facing any investor, particularly an institutional investor, is how to deal with the custodian issues. They're a nightmare. And if Fidelity is going to get there and work it out, it's going to bring a lot of people into the market. It can make a huge difference in terms of kickstarting the development of cryptocurrency and the related blockchain. I talked last week about the Russian pension story. Putin has come out with reforms for the pensions, and the question in my mind is, why did he do it? If you look at the amount of money he's saving on the pensions, but what it's going to do to his popular support, clearly he feels he must need every dime for military expenditures, and I can understand why. But you'll see, if you look at the drop in his approval ratings or the other tensions as a result of his doing this, it'll show you why Kick the Can is so popular and it's so hard for countries to do what, for example, the Netherlands did long ago, which is face the issues of the baby boomer generation and deal with them economically so that you don't end up with the kind of things we see in Illinois or in different places around the United States. Anyway, so European blues, there are plenty of them. And remember, Europe has not started with its quantitative or reversing its quantitative easing. So they have not started to tighten yet. Emerging markets, The Economist had a very good piece. Its new cover story is The Next Recession. And they pointed out that the IMF is predicting slower growth globally, as well as you add that to a tighter U.S. monetary policy and you've got a real squeeze. Let me just read one section of what they said. The Fed has raised interest rates 8 times since December 2015. The ECB, the European Central Bank, has not raised them yet. In Japan, rates are negative. China, the principal target of Mr. Trump's trade war, relaxed monetary policy this week in response to a weakening economy. When interest rates rise in America but nowhere else, the dollar strengthens. That makes it harder for emerging markets to repay their dollar debts. Rising greenback has already helped propel Argentina and Turkey into trouble. This week, Pakistan asked the IMF for a bailout. So the question, as we've talked about now for almost 2 years, is how bad can the bear trap get? Emerging markets are now 59% of the global GNP, almost 60%. So if the bear trap gets really bad, to me, it's an opportunity at some point to take your positions in those markets. Because if you look at the long-term growth, it's, you know, the long-term growth rate is there, but trying to figure out what that timing is going to be difficult, if not impossible, to calculate. The bottom line, when you look at the geopolitics globally or you look at what's happening in financial markets, there's one defining constant in the shift to the multipolar world, and that is more people and peak everything. The expression peak everything, I first heard it when I was down at the gold show in New Orleans, and somebody asked Jimmy Rogers if he believed in peak oil, and he said, forget peak oil, it's peak everything. And sure enough, that's where we are. Although I would point out this week that Bezos talked about his role in space and said that he planned to invest $1 billion a year in Blue Origin, which is a space company, and predicted that eventually there'll be a trillion humans living across the universe as we get going with space, which is perfectly possible. I just hope we'll be humans and not chipped. More people peak everything, and I agree with Bezos. That's one of the reasons I think it's so important that we lead in space. Our hero this week are the researchers from the Moscow-based Fromkin Institute of Physical Chemistry and the Russian Academy of Sciences Federal Research Center for Biotechnology, who've been able to isolate microorganisms which can be used to safeguard the surrounding environment from liquid radioactive waste. Can you imagine? They've come up with a bacteria that will neutralize nuclear waste. Wow. No wonder they're over helping with Fukushima. I wanted to also give some shout-outs. Bob Dean, the former sergeant major who's done a huge amount for disclosure on the black budget and extraterrestrial issue, died this week. And I just want to say thank you, Bob. He was, what a great man he was. The Oath Keepers have been working hard to help for in the Florida Panhandle on the hurricane, and they tend to do that whenever there's a natural disaster. They do a call to action for volunteers. I really appreciate them. And then finally, last but not least, Chuck McCorkle, who has been a partner with me and Dr. Farrell on the crowdfund, the Oregon Project. Sure enough, Dr. Farrell's Oregon has been delivered. We just formally accepted delivery today. And we'll be sending out a picture and update shortly for the donors. And I'll get all of this up on the crowdfund website. So if you're not a donor, but you want to get all the info and the pictures, you'll check that out when I get it updated sometime early next week. Anyway, Chuck has been an absolute prince in terms of working through the design and ordering of the org and the contract, and then patiently working through what turned out to be a year of delays and delivery problems. It was a very challenging process, and Chuck did a great job of keeping us cool and getting the job done. So I know Dr. Farrell appreciates his efforts, and so do I. And I used to have a partner who says, I love it when a plan comes together. And this plan has come together in a beautiful way, but oh, I can't tell you how many times the universe tried to tear it apart, but didn't work. Too positive. So Chuck, thank you. It was a great job and a great gift to Dr. Farrell that you gave him. Let's go to the movies. I wanted to review a movie which I wouldn't recommend as great entertainment. It's called The Myths of Avalon, and it explores the legend of King Arthur and the evolution from the pagan religions to Christianity in Britain under the Saxon rule, and really describes how the goddess mother of the pagan religions reappears in Christianity as Mother Mary, and that's part of what it takes for Christianity to attract in all the women and really take off. It's kind of interesting to imagine and study and read about what that negotiation must have been to sort of pull the pagan religions into the Christian basket. I wanted to talk about it because Every time I'm in Europe, I'm struck at the extent to which Mother Mary and the Divine Feminine is a major presence. I'm back at Lake Constance, and there's a in the center of the lake, there's a statue down in the water of Mother Mary, and there's a in August 15th every year, people get in their boats and go out to the statue to pray for Mother Mary in the lake and the whole area. And but you feel and see the presence of the Divine Feminine so much, and it's so powerful. And of course, it's the balance between the very masculine Christ energy and the very feminine Mary energy is, to me, is part of the balance that is described in the Myths of Avalon by one of the pagan priestesses. And then the other reason I wanted to bring it up is that John Rappaport has not been able to join us for a while on the Soleri Report, which is, you know, I just love John so much. I miss having him on, and I hope to get him back as soon as he's available. But one of my favorite John Rappaport pieces, and you can find it in one of his collections, which you can buy on his website, is The Voyage of Merlin, where he goes back to the days of the Arthur legend and talks about what our culture was like and what our worldview was like and how much more powerful we were personally. We had a lot less technology, but we had a lot more telepathic and other sort of mental intuitive powers. And it's an amazing piece in terms of developing in your imagination and thinking about what humans really are and what they can be. Anyway, so The Myths of Avalon sort of brought both of those up for me. John's work on imagination and creativity is so relevant to our transformation in the 21st century and the things that Harry and I were talking about and learning to walk about. And so I would really encourage you. I always listen to it when I'm driving because it's very, very long. You know, so a drive to California is perfect for me to listen to The Voyage of Merlin. Sometimes I listen to it more than once. I love it so much. Okay, the interview, as I said earlier when we talked about the theme, the goal that Harry and I had was to talk about how do we navigate a period which could arguably be the period of the greatest change in human history. It's quite extraordinary. When Joseph and I talked about it in the News Trends and Stories, he talked about, you know, this is, here we go, it's the Reformation, except it's bigger. So anyway, it was a very interesting conversation, but it drew tremendously on many different links and commentaries and Soleri reports that we've done over the last 3 or 4 years. And so there's an extensive link section. Make sure you log into the website and look at your subscriber links in the commentary. And I would really encourage you, if you're interested, to take advantage of some of that material, because there's a lot that can help you in this environment. Ask Catherine. The first subscriber writes, I started building a map of the people around me in my organization in order to gain some situational awareness. This is very intelligent, very smart thing to do. Making a hierarchy of who's who, who is whose boss, using organizational charts and records of funding rounds was easy. But once I got to the corporate boards, everything disappears behind private partnerships of the investors. I'm going to read a book about the nuts and bolts of how venture capital deals work. Do you have any research techniques I can use to keep digging? Yes, if you haven't mastered the Ask Edgar system at the SEC, you want to do it. Your company may be owned by private partnerships, but those private partnerships, whether it's a private equity firm or a venture capital firm, LBO firm, they have lots of positions on boards. They have lots of very close associations that may end up on publicly traded systems and companies, even if they're private, if their stock is private, depending on what they're doing with options or bonds, they could have to file in the SEC systems. So you really want to glean from the SEC system as much as you possibly can. The other thing you want to look at the board level is who's the CPA, who's the general counsel, who are the attorneys, And if you can find it, who are the error and admissions insurers? So now what I will tell you is if you map to a couple of degrees of separation, you will start to see patterns that will tell you very important things. So, for example, in a situation where the board and the lead investors are private, I'll still map out the different members of the board and what their firms do and where, what are the other boards they sit on. And pretty soon, it's amazing how many patterns you can see that are relevant to what's going on in your organization. So I would make sure that you're literate in the EDGAR system, and then I would map out, I would try and map out the investment financial ecosystem of the private investors who are either invested in your company or sitting on the board. One of the things you'll find is many of these groups network into the big private endowments like Harvard, like Yale, like University of Pennsylvania, like Brown. And those, you know, the network into the private investment will tell you a lot about what's going on. Part of the challenge I have in communicating how to do this is I have an enormous expert role sort of encyclopedia in my head, just so much information about different involvement of different people and different networks, different companies and different activities over the year. And that's very helpful in me when I map out this, I call it the who map is what you're doing. I map out the who map and I can, you know, having that sort of rich history gives me the ability to see a lot of things that's sometimes hard to see if you don't have that. Next, subscriber rights. Let me just suggest, see what you can do with Edgar and give me some feedback on what's working and let's see if I can come up with some more ideas that can help. But just never quit, just keep going, because eventually you'll see you can always figure it out. I tried to pull up a YouTube with Helen Shapeman, and everyone I tried said there was an error. Is this a little obvious? You may have done this when YouTube was down yesterday. So I don't think this had anything to do with Shapeman. I think the YouTube was down, and interestingly enough, Vimeo went down today, so somebody's working on their ability to take down videos. It wouldn't surprise me if they're getting ready. It's a test for the election. Anyway, I checked all the videos on Shapeman that I know are up and working. Then somebody sent a link to an interview with Bill Binney about the current swap drama and said he's like a fresh of breath air when he speaks. He's great. He's absolutely great. It's a good video. We put it up on the website. And then someone sent in another link to the request by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Demanding that the Office of Inspector General in Congress investigate the conduct of the Department of Justice attorneys in the case that that he's been litigating. And it's, you know, it's another one of these quite shocking things about what the department attorneys have done. So it's good to see. Okay, that's it for this week. October 25th, I'll be speaking with you from Zurich. We'll be talking about the third quarter 2018 wrap-up, equity overview, and Blockbuster Chartology. We'll be publishing Rambus's Blockbuster Chartology that Thursday. We have plenty to talk about. And then the following week, the next food series, Dr. Andrew Kilgore, Your Dental Health. Then November 8th, Saker, The Emerging Multipolar World. I'll interview Saker when I get to New York. And then November 15th, we'll complete the third quarter 2018 wrap-up with megacities and the growth of global real estate companies. Ladies and gentlemen, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck.